Welcome to Fans of the Forge. I'm Chris. To my left, we have Sean.
Hey.
To my right, we have Teresa.
Hello.
And today, we have a special guest calling in, Brandon Austin, who is a contestant on Forge and Fire. I believe it was the episode of the Navaja.
Yes. How you doing?
Good, good. How you doing, man?
Doing pretty good.
So, we've been doing these Forged in Fire wrap-up shows for a little while now. We became fans a little more recently. The show's been around, obviously, 5 seasons, and we're kind of playing catch-up. And
yeah, about 5 years.
Yeah. So we decided, you know, hey, it didn't seem like there's anybody actually doing much other content about the show, but it seemed like it was a pretty popular show. So that's kind of why we decided to do this little wrap-up show and kind of give our opinions on it. And hopefully we kind of make it a more unique show because of the fact that we are outsiders who have absolutely zero experience with any knife making and that sort of thing. But we love the show so much and we love the craftsmanship that goes into it so much. We figured, hey, why not talk about it and see if anything happens? So that being said, that led us down the path of getting these up on YouTube is how we kind of connected. You commented it on the video we put up of you, kind of corrected us on some of the stuff we said in that video, which we were happy to get, believe me, because we are completely in the dark. Yeah, we have no idea what goes on there during a show. So we were in the dark, and to kind of hear some of that behind the scenes stuff was really neat. So again, we thank you for contacting us on there, and we got some questions for you.
All right, Brandon. So, where are you located?
I live in La Porte, Texas. It's a suburb of Houston. That's where my home is.
Okay.
And, the show is actually filmed in New York, so they have to fly you out there. So.
All right. Cool.
True.
And how did you get into bladesmithing?
I started bladesmithing a little over 6 years, almost 7 years ago now, and I've always made things with my hands, furniture, carving, wood. My brother wanted a knife, and I watched a video on YouTube how to make a knife out of a rasp, and I started from there, started reading books and watching videos, and became a bladesmith. That's how I generally started.
Oh, wow. That's kind of what we're looking to do is the YouTube route. We want to build our own forge. First things first, we actually need to get a space to put it in, and then once we have that, we're gonna start looking into what we need to build it. And then our goal was to look at the YouTube videos out there and see if we could get, you know, a good basic beginner's guide from there to get us started on the right course at least.
There's a lot of people they go a little overboard with it when they start. They think they need a propane forge and an anvil and all that. And I started in a barbecue pit. You know, I wanted to make it, and I ended up burning it up because it can't handle the heat. But I made probably 10 blades out of that pit, and on the back of a little $30 vise had a little hammering area on it.
Right.
And that's where I started making my knives, was right there.
No kidding.
Just gathered the tools as I got better and sold blades. I used that money to buy more tools until 7 years later, I have everything I need, and it was all bought from my knives.
That's so great. That's fantastic.
Took some time. Took time to do it, but that's how I did it.
I think that's probably the case with any sort of skill that you have to put some time into to really master it and get good at it. And then after a little while, you start to reap the dividends of that or the payout of that. So that's cool. That's an interesting story to hear that. So maybe we don't have to go too far crazy right off the bat.
I got a vise with a flat spot on it so we can hammer it.
I have a fire pit.
Yeah. All right.
The turkey thing. Made.
One thing about YouTube, you have to be careful with the videos, and I fell into the trap, is there's 100 videos and maybe 90 of them are teaching you the wrong thing. So you learn it the wrong way, or you start doing it and you go to read a book from a real bladesmith, or you watch a video. I joined the American Bladesmith Society, and they have forums, and you start talking to the masters and things, and you realize things you learned off YouTube weren't exactly right. There is a handful of guys on YouTube that show you exactly how you should do it in the correct way. The problem is learning when you first start how to weed that out.
And right.
There is quite a few that are good, but there's quite a few that do it incorrectly that will ruin what you're doing. But
that's good to know.
Trial and error.
Yeah.
So are you full or part-time?
I am part-time. Yeah, it's more of a hobby
okay
right now.
It is.
Oh, All right. So how do you get customers, like that people that you're selling your knives to? Do they find you on Facebook or something, or do you promote on social media, that sort of thing?
I have promoted a little bit. I have an Etsy site and all that, but I generally sell to the people I work with. I work in the oil refineries, so we do turnarounds and that, and there's hundreds of people out there with make pretty decent money, so we all hunt and fish, and they say have knives, and I don't think I've only sold 2 or 3 blades offline. Most of them, before I could sell them online, I've already sold them in person. So I hand it to the guy, he hands me cash. That's how I've generally done it. So
cool.
Works out pretty good.
What equipment do you use regularly? I know you said you start out with an anvil. So what do you kind of use now?
Right now, when I'm forging a blade, of course, you use your basics, the forge. As you've seen on the show, I started out with coal for the first couple years. And I started way differently. That killed me. I use gas and some pieces of wood and a power blower. Just turn it on and you got fire. You didn't have to hand crank it and have a piece of paper. But I use my propane forge and my anvil, which I've made my anvil. Bought a big chunk of steel and made it. And my hammer is probably my favorite thing. But the thing I use the most, my 2x72 grinder and my drill press.
Okay.
Didn't think I'd use a drill press that much, but actually I really enjoyed the drill press.
Oh, nice. So for the drill press, I'm thinking of, I've seen it used in the show before, and a lot of times it's maybe if you have to do stuff with the handle and maybe add pins and things like that. Is there other stuff that you're using it for during the process?
Really, it's just the handle. Use it for, of course, your handle pins, drilling out handle stock, and then finger guards. Finger guards have to be very precise with your measuring and filing. But if you have a good vise for your drill and you can drill nice and steady, you can get those holes pretty accurate. It saves a lot of time and a lot of wasted energy.
Oh, okay.
Is there a material and style you prefer when forging blades?
I use only pretty much 10 series steel, 1095, 1084, 1075. I prefer those. Right now I use 1075 and 1084 the most. They're probably the most forgiving when it comes to actual forging and quenching. Other steels, 52100, those type steels, even 1095, you have to be a lot more accurate with your heat treating and you have to have the equipment, which I do, but I've used these steels for so long, that's what I like to use.
Cool. Is that what do those numbers signify exactly?
Well, the higher the 75, 1075, 1084, 1095, that is the carbon content. So 1095 has almost 1% carbon in it, which is a lot higher than, say, a lot of people like railroad spikes, but they're probably more of a 1040. Mm-hmm. They won't hold an edge as long. Really good for, say, a tool or pounding on it. It won't chip. It'll take good wear, but it won't hold an edge for very long.
Right.
Oh. So your anvils and your hammers and things of that are made out of mid 10 series. Now, straight steel, say an I-beam, very low 10 series, almost no carbon. So it's steel, but it don't have a lot of carbon, so it's not going to be able to be hardened. It won't hold an edge. Be real durable, but it won't be sharp very long, if ever.
Oh, okay.
You know where like W2 falls into?
W2 is actually, believe it or not, they say don't quench in water, but it's a water quenching steel.
Okay.
And, I don't know the exact medical breakdown of that, but I think it has a little over 1% carbon in it. But it is a water quenching steel, but they tell you in ABS, you talk to them, there's still everything perfect heat treating oven, perfect brine solution, warm water with chemicals in it, still 70% chance of fail on your quench, even if you're perfect at it.
Oh,
so
wow.
They say stay away from water unless you're willing to take that risk. Really what the water is, it quenches faster, and if you're looking for a hormoon, which is a, I don't know if you know what that is, but it's a colored line on the blade where it's differential heat treated.
Right.
The bottom's harder than the top.
Is that where they use the clay on it a lot of times too, to kind of?
Yeah, you can clay the blade, and it'll do the same thing. Now, W2 is a fast quench steel. It's a deep hardening steel, so it'll bring that hamon out a lot better, and water brings it out even better. It's faster quench, but it's really aggressive on the blade, and there's a good chance it'll break. So, especially on the show, stay away from water. You can't remake a blade.
Sure.
You can, but it's going to be not fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what is your favorite style of blade to make?
Yeah, I like more of camping type knives or hunting knives. I really like working type knives. I like show knives and fancy knives, but I want people, even if it is a show knife, want them to use it. So, Bowie type knives, things they're going to take out and actually use for something. I don't like making a blade that's just going to sit on a shelf. And they bought it and they say, "Yeah, I got a blade." I mean, it's nice to have the money, but I prefer them to call me and say, "Hey, I skinned 3 deer with this knife and I didn't have to sharpen it." I'm like, yeah, I like that. Right. That's what I prefer.
Oh, cool.
So how long does it normally take for you to make a blade from start to finish, from design to quench or hand?
I can make a blade. I can make a blade in a day. I used to do it in a day and be done with it. But I don't have a lot of time with work, so I try to knock them out in a weekend. But if I go for a nicer knife, no scratches in a blade, more of a show quality or really quality knife, it could take me up to a week, 4 or 5 days to make one blade. But I generally can get them done in a weekend.
Okay.
Do you make anything besides blades?
Yes, I do. Right now, all I make is blades because I'm trying to pass my journeyman stamp test with the American Bladesman Society. So all I do is practice with that. But blades are more for me, for enjoyment. I don't want to make a living off making blades. I wanted to do it for me. So I do make furniture. I used to make a lot of furniture and shelves and gates and things like that. I was learning how to actual blacksmith, not just make blades. But the past 2 years, I've decided to just push very hard on knives to become a journeyman stamp level bladesmith. And then I'm going to go back to making furniture and that, and just go back to enjoy making blades. I make a lot of other things.
Can you explain the rankings of the bladesmith step? So you're going for journeyman, and then there's also master, but what else is
yes,
there?
Yes, I can. When you join the American Bladesman Society, you pretty much join. Everyone's an apprentice. So they offer schools and classes. I think it's a $30 fee. I can't really remember what it is for a year. And their forms are more than worth the $30 because masters will comment on everything. They have people that watch the forms for them, and they will comment on it. So it's a wealth of knowledge to be on there and asking people that actually know what they're doing. So you have to be an apprentice for at least 3 years. You can do it for two if you take their two-week class on basics of bladesmithing. But 3 years as an apprentice, and then you can test for a journeyman. The journeyman test involves a performance test. You have to bring a blade. I don't know if you've seen that. If not, you should look that up on YouTube. If you go to my channel, you'll see me failing it. It was I'm pretty good at failing stuff with knives, I guess. but you have to cut a 1-inch hemp rope with one swing 6 inches from the bottom, free hanging. It can't be tied off. And you have to chop through a 2x4 twice. Still has to be able to shave your arm, no edge deformation, no dulling, no rolling of the edge, no nothing. And then at that point, you put 3 inches of your blade in a vise and you bend it 90 degrees without it breaking.
Wow.
yeah.
Oh my God.
That's the performance part of the test. So once you pass that, then it actually just happened. The blade show that they put on, that's actually the ABS show. That's their biggest knife show of the year. That Friday morning, they judge masters and journeymen. So you have to bring 5 show blades to their standards to be judged. And if they accept your blades, you pass. If they don't, you fail. And gotta wait again to the next year.
Oh wow!
So pretty much journeyman and master. That's it. Apprentice, journeyman, master. That's the only levels they have.
Kind of the same as any like trade.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Do you have any good beginner's tips? So like, obviously, we don't have any of the equipment yet, but we are we'll look into it now. And based on kind of what you told us, we could get a pretty rudimentary setup going to at least practice and start the process. Do you have any other tips that you could provide on that?
Yeah, a good tip with when you go to bladesmithing is, if you bite off more than you can chew, I mean, it happens, just enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, then try to find something you do enjoy about it. If you just don't like it, it's not going to be for you. People say if you don't forge, if you grind it, you're not bladesmithing, you're a blade maker. I mean, yeah, they're right, but there's a lot of grinding in the blade. So if you have to start off just grinding your blade and getting the heat treat right and learning that, then start out that way and then progress to forging. And you don't have to go right into forging your tip, grind your tip. Now, it's not – a lot of people won't like me saying that, but right now, without a microscope, you're not going to be able to tell me the difference between a forged blade and a ground blade. I prefer to forge all mine to shape, and that's what we have to do. But when I first started, I forged them pretty rough. And, I mean, they were pretty rough, so I pretty much ground them to shape after that. I forged a really ugly-looking bar, and then I ground it. So don't let people put you down on that. Just do what you enjoy. Another thing is watch the videos, and watch other people and learn your tools. My buddy started doing it, and I tried to tell him not to do it, but he got a 4-pound framing or a 4-pound forging hammer. Well, it's going to blow your arm up. You need to get what's appropriate for you. If you can't swing a 4-pound hammer consecutively and evenly, that's another thing. Just because you can swing it, you have to hit flat. If you hit on the edge, you're going to destroy the steel. So if you can't control that hammer with just your wrist movement, it's too heavy. So then you need to move to a smaller hammer. And really just try. Don't give up. Just do it. And who cares if you're not the best? Just have fun with it.
Yeah, hopefully that's the goal here.
I mean, if I make like a big turd, I'm not going to show it off anyway.
That's another thing I will point out. I don't comment a lot online. I'm in a lot of forums on Facebook and all that. And I don't know, PC Society, I don't know. People will put their work on there and you say, what do you think? And then people will comment. Take constructive criticism. I had a master smith, Kevin Cash, and I sent some pictures of blades that I thought were just the best I'd made. I knew there was problems with them. This was several years ago. And, man, I thought I did a great job. And he asked me, how strict do I want him to be on them? I said, go all out. And I would say about four pages of an email back with tons of pictures and pointers. And, he destroyed them blades. I might as well just throw them away. They were, but it was all constructive criticism. I didn't take offense to any of it. I was very happy he did it. It made me a better bladesmith. And then again, just a year ago, I took a show blade. I actually have it right here. I mean, at the time, this was my best blade. I was very proud of this blade. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy that blade. And I took it with me to do my performance test. And I let that master smith, Greg Neely, critique that blade for me. About 35 minutes of him telling me what he didn't like about it, he was done. And again, you don't take offense to that. People get mad when they put their first knife online and people say, hey, the flow of the handle doesn't match the Ricasso or the back of the blade, and they get angry. Take it constructively and learn from it, and it'll make you better. And that's all I got to say about that. I mean,
yeah,
a lot of people get offended, and they shouldn't.
Yeah, so with that, who was your favorite Forge and Fire? What was it, cast or did they judge?
Judge, cast member, nah. Whatever you want to say there.
My favorite cast member, I'll have to say, I didn't get to meet him. The one I got to meet that was probably my favorite was David Baker. Okay. And they're all really nice. I like Ben Abbott was there, but I really wanted to meet Jay Nielsen. I wanted him to judge my blade and watch me forge. That's who I was really wanting to meet, but he wasn't on my episode. But Jay Nielsen is probably my favorite.
Cool.
Are they all as nice as they seem?
I'm going to say no. There's one in particular I'm not going to say, but I didn't care for him too much, but. Hey, you don't have to like everybody, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I may get back on one day, so I don't want to.
Yeah.
Hey, smart.
Of course. And so you mentioned prior to us starting the call that the round one and round two are actually shot on different days, and you're told to bring the same outfit with you. So our question kind of already is answered if if we asked about getting a lunch break between the two rounds. Obviously, yeah. You're getting a whole like dinner and more break there. So,
I can break down that whole day for you because it was actually a terrible day. I mean, it was nothing nice about that first day. It was rough. I worked 12, 14-hour days in a refinery, and I was hurting at the end of that day. I can tell you that. Well, on our first day, we got there. They picked us up. I guess everyone could be different. They picked us up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they feed you breakfast. I'm not going to say it was awesome because it wasn't, but they feed you breakfast, and then you get there, and you start interviews. I've never done so many interviews in my life. I mean, interview after interview after interview. We had hours of interviews, and you try hard not to let them catch you on things. They're trying to get certain things out of you, and I found out right away with that not crying thing. that whole talking trash about another competitor in a 2-page email that I'd sent them a year previously, that's why I was there. My second question on my first interview was asking about that guy, and to be frank, I don't care about that guy. You know, I just made a comment like, hey, and this guy named Brandon cried on the show, my name's Brandon, I can't let that go. And man, they hounded that to death. Every interview, I'm like, God, okay, let's talk about this again. But so you try to dance around questions. So in that first day, you can only go in certain rooms. People are by your side all the time. You know, of course, they're keeping it secret. They take it very seriously. They take your phones as soon as you get there and everything. They don't want you, really, they don't want you even talking to each other that much. And they take it very seriously as a competition. If you try to talk or help each other around the floor, they get on you. They holler at you, and it happened to a couple of us. And so I'd say we did interviews till probably 10:30. Then took a little break, and then, of course, my episode was not on the set. We kind of seen that coming. There wasn't many people there. It was weird. We get in a vehicle, and we have to drive to the location. Once there, you got to put on makeup and mics and just get – you know, situated. You do your intros, and then you go and sign rules and go over everything that's going on. And then you take a lunch break. So we took a little lunch break. We probably started forging about 12:30, right in the heat of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And we got 4 hours for ours. So we got done probably about 5 o'clock. I mean, there's cameras everywhere. I don't know how TV works. I mean, I didn't think that guy in front of me ever left with a camera, but when they show a shot down the anvils, he's not there. So, I mean, them guys are everywhere. I mean, I blew sparks all over one. I stopped. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. And he moved to the other side and just kept on grinding. It's like, okay. I mean, they never left your side. They were always with you. And I think I paid attention to what was going on around me too much. There's probably 100 people right outside on the road. We were next to a subway, and all these New Yorkers videoing, and there's probably 10 cameramen, and the judge is walking around, and it was a little nerve-wracking, a little more than what I thought. You know, I thought I could handle it a lot better than I did, and I was like, man, there's just people everywhere. So we got done about 5, I would say, and more interviews. And, of course, you have to bring more than one set of clothes because you're going to – I mean, we had to do interviews after the forge as if we hadn't forged yet because there's questions they didn't ask us yet. So we had to change into clean clothes.
Oh, okay. Huh.
So at the end of the day, they took pictures of you to see how dirty you were, however that may be. We got home. We got back to the hotel about 9 o'clock. So we started at 6. We ended about 9, and that was the first round.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so got home, we ate dinner at 9 at the hotel, got up next morning, back at the studio at 6, and then you do the judging, and it was probably lunch that day before I finally got cut on for that first round. So a day and a half for the first round, probably,
wow,
of interviews,
wow,
and filming. But the forging was only 4 hours. There was no retakes on none of that. You started forging, that was it.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was interviews.
So the judging doesn't even happen until the next day.
Well, honestly, the judging, the actual judges do your tempering of your blade after the fact at night. So you guys may not forge. I don't know if you know it, but when they put that steel in the oil, that hardens it. Mm-hmm. At that point, it's like glass. You can just slam it off the anvil, it will break. So there's another step that's called tempering. You're drawing back the hardness of the blade. That takes hours. I usually do 3 cycles, 2 hours a piece, 6 hours to temper a blade. I don't know exactly what they do on the show. They told us what they were going to do. I don't remember. I think it was 3 cycles of an hour, 3 hours. There's no way to do that on the on the show. That's right. Why this season they now say tempered blade on the second round instead of just hardened blade, because people were following the show's instructions, going to make it and breaking knives. People were complaining, hey, you guys are lying. That's how you make a blade. Well, it's not. There's off-the-screen tempering. Mm-hmm. So they get a good look at those blades off the screen doing that. I mean, they probably know before they come back for the second, you know, shoot for the second round. They already know who they're going to cut.
Mm-hmm. So they have a spinoff show that has just started this past year, actually, Knife or Death. And do you have any interest in that show, or would you want to go on that show and present one of your knives and do the course?
Man, Knife or Death, really, to me, I got mixed emotions about it. It's kind of cheesy. It's
We have the same thoughts. We have the same thoughts. We do enjoy watching it here and there, but it gets a little bit heavy on the cheese factor, for sure.
I watch every single one. What are you talking about here and there?
I watch it. You know, I watch it. I find it somewhat entertaining, but I don't know. I'll be honest, I wouldn't mind going on the show because I wanted to test my blade on Forged in Fire and I didn't get to. I'd like to make one and bring it there. I have a buddy that's actually trying to get on it, and I've tried to ask him if he wanted me to make his blade. He's going to make his own if he does get on. But I wouldn't mind going just to test one of my blades, but so far they've rejected me because they have a list of Forged in Fire contestants they want to use. So,
I see.
And I'm sure I wasn't flamboyant enough or
right,
or whatever it was to be on the, you know, I didn't wear some fancy kilt or what the case may be. But, you know, that test looks rough. They're putting those knives through the ringer on that. And just like on the Forge, people not swinging correctly and everyone's sitting at home like, why ain't they hitting the fish like this? And they've never seen the show before. And in the heat of the moment, when you got, you know, 5 or 6 cameras around you, you know, it's easy to say that until you actually did it. I actually complained about Forged in Fire quite a bit, and I still kind of do. In my email to get on the show, I couldn't figure out how people would go on that show and not know how to forge weld or not know how to make cable Damascus, or at least not read a book. Like, how are you not prepared for this? After the first season, you should have known that they're going to put you through a lot. Right. And one thing that's going to haunt me forever if I don't ever get back on the show, forget the cold forge, whatever, I couldn't get it started. I was that guy, you know. I was like, okay, yeah, I can't get it started, great. But when I burnt my blade, they didn't show that whole thing. I went ballistic. I mean, I was really angry, and they cut most of that out. I was kind of hoping they wouldn't, but I brought up in my email specifically that point, burning your blade while talking to the camera. And I said it in my email, I can't understand how someone is going to not pay attention enough to be talking to their camera and burn their blade. To me, that's unacceptable. So then I go on the show and I get interviewed while forging, and I burn my blade while I was talking to the camera. And man, I was mad. I was very angry with that.
And they showed, I think, because I was watching some of that today, and I think it was Wade. His blade also broke. Like, he overheated it, his, and he just tapped it on an anvil. He just actually just laid it on the anvil, and the tip just like came right off.
Yeah, that was on his tang. His handle part came off, and that was actually like about 45 minutes after I did mine. They did it back to back on the show, but it was, they definitely edit things differently. Mm-hmm. Definitely edit them differently. Like the quench of the blade, they showed me and Christoph like barely quenching our blades in time, kind of thing, you know. And I was the first one to quench, and clean my blade and everything, and. So, you know, they kind of play it up differently for TV. And, yeah, I understand. It actually made me look better because I could have forged a little longer. But I was forging cold. You know, that's all there was to it. And I look back on it, I'm like, man, I was having trouble moving that metal. It's because it was cold. And I was gun shy. I burnt my handle once. It started to overheat, and it was on the handle, so I didn't worry about it. I didn't have to scrap it. But it was after I already burnt the blade once, so I kind of got fearful. And with that sun, it's hard to tell the temperatures. the anvils are actually polished as well, so that the light was reflecting really bad off the anvils, and it's very, very hard to see the colors. And I was hammering cold. You couldn't see those cracks, like I was talking about judging. You couldn't see those cracks that day. Everyone looked at it. No one said a word. I didn't see it. When they tempered the blade, the cracks came out. You could see those cracks during forging. If I had a good mound built properly or I was in a gas forge, heat will make cracks dark. So when you go to forge, if you see dark lines in your blade, you have cracks. So you might as well throw it away and start over.
Interesting. That's good to know.
Let's see. And so you've been to, have you been to some blade conventions?
Not many. I've been to a few knife shows. The first time I ever met any actual bladesmiths besides myself that actually forged blades was actually on the show. That was the first time I'd actually met people in person, talked to them on the phone or through email or things like that. But that was the first time I actually met anybody that actually did it. Actually, Christoph Derringer, the kooky old Canadian there, actually had his, I have his DVD, and he's a master smith of the American Bladesmith Society. And I had a couple of his DVDs. He's a pretty good smith. Just a little crazy. Smokes a lot of weed.
Have you ever competed in any professional chopping contests?
No, I have not. I'd actually like to do that. I like those cutting competitions. I like chopping water bottles and all that and rope. There's actually a lot more to it than that. You can't just, on those cutting competitions, you see them guys in Forging Death or whatever it is. You can't just show up and sign up. There's actually a school and a class you have to go through for them to prove that you are actually safe enough to use the blade and do this competent. So you have to go through some stuff to actually be certified to do their competition. I just haven't spent the time to do it.
Okay.
Oh, interesting. So beyond packing multiple outfits for the show, was there anything else that you had to do in preparation, or you just basically you pack a bag and you head there?
Yeah, well, getting ready for the show, I know Matt, the winner, Matthew, he put on a clinic. I mean, he did a good job. And he said he was practicing a lot, making one-hour blades, you know, or two-hour blades, trying to get faster with just whatever he had in his scrap bin. He was training pretty hard for it. And myself, I made sure I watched videos on canister, jelly roll. I watched several videos, hours of videos, over and over again of things that I've done here or there, but I always refer back to a book while I'm doing it just to make sure it was kind of fresh in my mind before I got there. I didn't want to throw something at me I hadn't done. And my biggest challenge was being outside with a coal forge. They gave us beautiful steel, 1084. Mm-hmm. Very forgiving steel, but it was an inch and a quarter bar. That's a lot to break down. And the biggest preparation, then I pick my tools. You get to bring as many tools as you want, but you get to bring three approved tools to each round. So I brought my own tools. That was actually a hindrance to me at the beginning because I brought my own hammer that I like to use. It feels good. It's only a 2-pound forging hammer, though, and an inch and a quarter bar. I didn't notice the French 8-pound French style forging hammer laying there. I should have used that, but I just used my hammer. And afterwards, I talked to the other guys. They're like, yeah, we used the big hammer to break it down. And me, I'm just pounding on it with a 2-pounder. I could have done that a lot faster and used less energy. But that's another thing that mental errors just fly by there. And you just don't even know they're happening until it's too late. You look back on it and you're like, man, why'd I do that? It was just dumb. And that happened several times throughout the episode. Like I had leather gloves on. I kept burning my hands. That bar kept getting hot. I kept cooling it off in the water. Forgot that I had welding gloves in my bag. I seen Matt with them on. I'm like, oh, yeah, good job, dumbass. You got welding gloves in the bag, you know? So I picked them up, put them on, problem solved. And it's just real fast, though.
Yeah, pressure like that, I'm sure, just makes your mind go in so many different directions. And so I can only imagine what it would be like to
right.
be down there.
Right? You're in a foreign environment. You have some tools with you, not all of them. Then you gotta kind of figure out where everything is, and yeah, I mean, there's a whole different setup going on. So,
yeah, it was a lot different forging there and using their tools and just their setup. And I hate that blower. It's got such a small gear. normally blowers are hand cranked. You crank it a couple times and that air is gone and it continues to move by itself.
Right.
Oh yeah. But, okay.
Yeah, there was a tiny little crank on that thing.
Oh yeah. My arm was wore out, and it's not, it wasn't from hammering, it was from spinning that little handle. I probably did it for 45 minutes straight and without, until I got my fire going, and yeah, I was wore out just from that little bitty crank on that handle.
I was wondering, at the beginning of the episode, you know, Ben's there saying you could, he would have used the steel grate versus the bars, which I'm thinking, what the hell are you going to do with a steel grate like that to make a blade? Like, how would you even do that?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, so because the bar is solid, so right, that's perfect blade material that I'm thinking of. What the hell are you going to do with a grate?
I heard him say that as well, listening to it, and that's a complete – that he, I'm not going to say he's a liar, but I guarantee if he was on that episode, I know he won twice, he would have grabbed the bar.
Yeah.
What you're going to do with that grate is you got to – and they wanted us to grab that grate. I could tell by the way they kept talking about it. Like, oh, you guys can do it as a team. They wanted us to kind of help each other out with that grate. And it's like, get out of here with that. What you have to do is it was 3/8 round bar on that grate. So what you're going to do is you're going to pull that grate up. You're going to cut it apart into strips, pound them out straight, and then I guess wire them together because you don't have a welder. We had no power tools.
Right.
And then forge weld it into a bar. Then make a knife. Nobody's going to do that in a coal forge in the sun. It's just, you could if you had all day and that's all you had and that's what you plan to do, but you got 4 hours. You're not going to do that. You're going to go take that solid bar and you're going to make a knife out of it. No, nobody would. Whoever did that would not make a blade by the end of the 4 hours. I could put money. I put money on it. I put the 10 grand on it. You're not going to
finish the blade. I mean, from my perspective, I was like, well, what could you do with that? If you're in the normal forge, just said, well, I guess you could cut it up and make a canister Damascus out of it, but you can't there because you're just in coal forges. You can't do a can. So I'm you know, it just didn't make sense. So
you'd have to forge weld it, and it would be. And matter of fact, I didn't see any stainless wire. So without stainless tie wire, forge welding that would be dang near impossible because stainless melts at a higher temperature than carbon. I remember seeing carbon wire. But if you have thin carbon wire on a hard, bigger carbon rod, it's going to melt before your welding temperature is reached. So I really don't remember seeing stainless wire, but also I didn't look because I wasn't going to forge weld. Right. I don't know anybody that was going to. As soon as we walked off from looking at the material, we went out and did our little mic check and all that. I think I asked everyone, I don't remember if it was me or someone else. I'm pretty sure it was me. Who's using the bar? And we all laughed and we all raised our hand. Using the bar. Me using nothing else. I mean. So I could never see anybody grabbing that grate.
Yep. And then you went and got everyone to bars.
Yeah, there's more to that. I'm let's just say them bars aren't as easy or weren't as hard to take off as what you see.
It didn't look like it. It looked like you just kicked it and it would have come right off the wall.
Yeah, they come off pretty so when I grabbed it was not that, and I was like, well, okay, I grabbed two. So I cut mine in half and threw one on his table, you know, and yeah, handed one to Christoph as you know, walked by. So, and there was actually a lot more helping than they show. We get in trouble a lot, and you're not supposed to help. You actually sign rules beforehand, and you're not going to help. It's part of the rules. I always wondered that in the first season and the second season until I applied. The bladesmithing community is very small, so I'm like, how are these guys not helping each other more? Like, I've never met a master that I've asked a question that hasn't told me the answer. Or at least his version, and they weren't helping each other. Come to find out, you signed rules saying you're not going to help each other, and they edited it out because there was more helping on our episode than what you seen, and we got yelled at, had to go back to our station, and they edited it out.
They sent you in timeout? Like, what the hell is that all about?
They just holler, hey, get back to your station. You know, you don't want to get disqualified. They're probably not going to because you're already there.
Yeah.
But it's frowned upon. They don't like it. The producers don't like it.
That's bullshit because, like, there's an episode I was just watching where something happened in the actual forge, and Doug's like, boy, that's great. Those guys helping each other out like that. Like,
the judges love it because they are bladesmith as well.
Right. I
mean, Jay Nelson, he's a master smith. A lot of them guys on that side, you know, are master smiths, and David Baker. So they love it. They understand the bladesmith community. They understand helping each other. They like it. But the producers that run the show don't like it. It's a competition. They don't want you doing it.
Oh, gotcha.
Makes sense.
It seems like your question.
Yeah, what do you have to, like, okay, so you have 4 hours, obviously, in your competition, and I find it hard to go an hour without having to go to the bathroom, so I can only imagine that you're going to have to, like, what do you do if you have to use the bathroom during the competition?
You just go. I mean, they got bathrooms right there, and you take a break, and you go. There were several times where we did take breaks, or I know there was once where I ate a banana. I was getting hot, and I just drank some water and ate a banana and stood there. And, man, Christoph, I think he was gone for like 30, 40 minutes at one time. And that's when he kind of got rejuvenated there and came back and finished out his blade. But, yeah, you just take a break and go. You got to manage your time. You feel you can do it, do it. I mean, Ray Kirk's episode, his first time, he sat down and asked for a cup of coffee. He had an hour left.
Yeah, I remember that. I saw that. That was pretty funny.
You know, he's like, hey, I'm done. You got any coffee? You know? But, yeah, just manage your time. Do what you got to do.
Can you, when you're actually forging, can you hear, like, the judges, like, talking shit or complimenting or any comments from them?
Whenever you are down there forging, in my episode, you couldn't hear them that well because they were actually a pretty good distance from us being outdoors and where we had it all set up. When we were actually in the forging area, the back of the shop, their actual forge on set, you could hear a lot better. So I bet people could hear, because we could hear them every now and then. And that's all how well you're tuning it in or out. Like, I believe it was Wade said he couldn't hear anything but what he was doing. He was very focused. For me, here, I got anxiety. I'm looking everywhere. I hear everything. I see what everyone's doing. And I'm just looking around. I heard them a couple times say things. I know they complimented Matt on something he did. I think it was drifting the holes for his pins and his handle. And, you know, you hear him, of course, when we break our blades. And several other things. You can't hear him here and there, but not great where we're at. You can hear him great, though.
Yeah, and I noticed there was some overdubs from Ben and I think maybe even Dave on the episode where I'm like, okay, that they record that in a studio, and I'm guessing because you said it was a lot of like noise out where you guys were and road noise, right? That makes sense then.
Yeah, that was the first time they'd ever done that on one of the episodes where they overdubbed. I actually didn't like that part of the episode. It was kind of like the crack, they brought up the cracks. If he keeps hammering cold steel, he's going to develop cracks.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't know how to have cracks until they heat treated it. So, you know, that was just hindsight 2020. Yeah, I know if I hammer cold steel, maybe it cracks, but.
Right.
So, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, I didn't think they did that very seamlessly. They could have done that better with the overdubs, where, I don't know, I didn't like that part of the show when they added that.
I agree with that too. We've noticed it more on more of the recent episodes that they've been doing some more of those overdubs, and sometimes it's okay, but it's pretty obvious. Like there's times where they're trying to make it seem like it's Will Willis saying something on the spot, but he has his back to the camera, and it's like this is not recorded at the same time. So something's off about it, and it takes a little bit out of the show, I think, when they throw those little extra overdubs in.
But I think so too. It takes a little bit of the liveness out of it, like it's right now happening.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was definitely done in a studio. I mean, but.
Yep.
So when they're doing the judging and you're in that side room with the glass in between, can you hear what they're saying? Is that soundproof? No? No, you can't hear them?
No, you can't hear them when they're in there. Now, they pretty much know before they go in that room. I mean, we done did our little conference in front of them. They've done looked at the blades behind, you know, behind the scenes and a little side room. You step off to the side and you talk there. And yeah, I mean, that's just part of it. It is a little nerve wracking, but I already knew. Everyone said, "Nah, you're not going home." I'm like, "Oh yeah, they're just being nice." I knew I was going home first. And my blade was too thick, which is something Jay Nielsen says. It's not, you know, it's not grinding fire; it's forging fire. accident. Where the handle met the Ricasso on the back of the blade had a hump in it. I didn't forge that down. It didn't flow correctly. I knew I was going. I'm pretty sure I was going. So I actually wasn't. It looked like I was upset when I left. They had me do that leaving scene quite a few times because I don't think I was mad enough. At first, I was smiling. Like, yeah, I knew I was leaving. I remember Ben Abbott. I hadn't even looked at my blade cracks when they first talked about it because, you know, don't move. So you're standing looking at the camera and or will like you're supposed to. You're not moving. Well, when we were getting set back up for when they were kicking us off the show, I looked at it. And right then, that was the first time I'd seen them cracks, and they were everywhere. Man, I was like, I looked up, and Ben Abbott's looking at me. I winked at him. He smiled. I was like, oh, yeah, I've had it. I'm pissed off my back. I was like, yeah, it's me. Don't worry about it, man. I was like, for sure, it's me. But, hey, that's how it goes. Someone's got to lose.
Yeah. So I think we're down to pretty much one last question here. Unless Sean, you have any extras after we answer this one. So we had got under the assumption that they maybe even filmed in Connecticut. Now we're based in Connecticut, so that was like, oh my gosh, are they actually based out of Connecticut too?
Things don't happen in Connecticut much. Yeah, like, it's very exciting for us.
So what we saw was Jay Nielsen had posted some photos on Instagram, and he had tagged Stamford, Connecticut, and he said he was forging on set, and then Teresa came to the realization like a couple hours ago, like maybe they were doing one of those competitions offset that day or that week, and then he was forging on that set. So that's why we were so excited that maybe it was Connecticut, but now we realize it's shot in New York. But they do a lot of the testing in Connecticut.
It seems, yeah.
And it, like the most, not this past week's episode or this week's episode, but the past weeks, they actually did the Memorial Day episode where they shot the blade. That was actually shot at a shooting range in Connecticut. So, okay, like, little things like that, they get us going real good because, again, Connecticut's known for, you know...
I've been through there.
Yeah, we've been through there on the way to Boston or New York, or, you know, the WWE is located here. That's their headquarters. That's one of our big claims to fame. So we were, you know... That's why we're asking about that. So you mentioned that they were in New York.
Yes. Yeah, they're in, I believe their studio is in like right between New Jersey and New York. And they actually have you stay in New Jersey. There's always debates about that. I didn't look exactly on my GPS where I was, but they fly to New York. And the scenes about Connecticut you're talking about, I would maybe some of the fort scenes where they actually go, where there's brick walls, like old timey colonial things. They may go to a battlefield that's around there they get to use. They do things out like ours, but ours was like 10 blocks away in the neighborhood. It was a concrete facility.
Right.
So we were still right there. I actually went up a week early with my family, and we seen New York and all there was to see. So.
Cool. Oh, cool. Well, that's all I got. Sean, you got any other questions?
Did you know about Dave Baker's pocket tape measure?
Dave Baker's pocket tape measure. No, I did not know that that's what it was. I figured when he was measuring that blade, that's what it was. But there's more to measuring that blade than what they show on TV. I'm not going to. I don't think I can go into that.
Sure.
At all. But you can see, if you look at the host's face, you can kind of see what I'm talking about when they're all like, yeah, I can't go into that one. But
No problem.
There's more to that.
But we just noticed recently that he carries a little tape measure on that chain.
Yeah.
And like, oh, well, how about that? How convenient. Like,
yeah, he's got it there. I like Dave Baker. He's actually a much bigger guy than what you think when you meet him in person. I didn't think he was that big of a guy. He's got big hands on him, and that's why I think he's always complaining about the handles.
Yeah.
Oh.
I got big hands. When we shook hands, his hands were pretty big. They're as big as mine or bigger.
Wow.
I was like, okay, that makes sense. He's a pretty big guy. And when you do make knives, that's another hint there. That's another – make sure you do shake your people's hands, your, you know, customers' hands, and judge their hand based on yours.
Huh.
You don't have to measure it. You just – when you shake their hand, you just mentally take a note. Okay, my palm's about the same size, or my fingers, I completely wrap their hand up or whichever. So when you make their blade, you kind of make it to fit their hand. People are surprised. Like, man, this feels good in my hand. Like – that's why, because you made it for them. And they got smaller hands. You don't want to make a blade if you got really big hands that fit yourself, or vice versa. If their hands as big as yours are bigger, you might want to make it a little bigger for them.
Right.
When you shake your hand, you do that.
that's a slick little piece of knowledge there. Yeah, that's really nice.
That was brought up on, someone else had mentioned that was on the show, that when he went to make the final weapon, he's like, "Oh, I remember shaking her hands." You know,
a lot of people do. A lot of bladesmiths will do that when they shake the hand. They're like, "Okay, that guy's got a big hand, so I need to make it for him."
Great. Well, Brandon, thanks again for, you know, giving us the time here to interview you. This is, again, our first interview, so we apologize for any hiccups and things like that along the way, and we apologize we couldn't get our video feed to you working, but hopefully we'll get that nailed down in the future. And, you know, maybe if you're interested down the line, we're looking to see if contestants that were on the show would want to fill in or come in and via Skype and talk about one of the actual episodes with us, do like a wrap-up show with us as well. So
I know that one of your other viewers had watched my episode was Wade. I think Matt watched it as well. So I know he's waiting to see this. He may want to talk to you guys have a winner on your show, you know.
Well, we do have one other interview scheduled coming up in a few weeks, and that is with
Drew,
who was the youngest Forge and Fire champion from the Zonde Spear episode. So that'll be an interesting one as well. But again, thank you for your time. And with that was our first interview on Fans of the Forge. So thanks, everybody, for watching the show. Remember to subscribe to the YouTube channel and like our videos. Check out the audio podcast if you'd rather just listen to it. And thanks again for watching. So thanks.
Thanks.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.